Five little monkeys jumping on the bed. One fell off and bumped his head. Mama called the doctor and the doctor said,
no more monkeys jumping on the bed.
So that wasn't the original opener for our show. We wanted to go with something a little bit more contemporary, and so we're just going to jump ahead and get the show started. This is Of Bananas, Coconuts, and Organ Grinders, The Impact of Monkeys on Human Civilization.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
We go where we want to, do what we like to do. We don't have time to get restless, there's always something new.
Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down. We're just trying to be friendly, come and watch us sing and play. We're the young generation, and we've got something to say.
Oh. Anytime or anywhere, just look over your shoulder, guess who'll be standing there.
Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
You are listening to Of Bananas, Coconuts, and Organ Grinders, The Impact of Monkeys on Human Civilization. This evening's show was put together by Jasmine Anderson from University of Mary Washington, Mohammed Moaz from University of Mary Washington, open online participant Shannon Hauser, and also former student at University of Mary Washington, and me, Andy Forgrave, open online student. We hope you enjoy the show, and we're going to start off with a piece that leads into our first segment. So once the monkeys are done, we're going to have Jack Johnson.
Roll along, I begin to find aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with everyone. We'll sing and dance to Mother Nature's song. This world keeps spinning and there's no time to waste. Will it all keep spinning, spinning, round and round and upside down? Who's to say what's impossible and can't be found? I don't want this feeling to go away. Please don't go.
Now, if you don't know, the connection between Upside Down by Jack Johnson and Monkees is that it was the theme song for the first Curious George animated film a few years back. And my kids were a little bit younger when we went and saw it, but this particular song had quite a bit of an impact on me at that time because I like Curious George and I had young kids.
Right now I'm upstairs on the main floor of the house in what we call the upstairs playroom. It's a room that was a bedroom for our second child when he was first born. And in preparing it for him, we painted it. It has three murals that are taken from the Curious George books.
There's two painters, and George just painted all over the walls with the guy's paint. And he painted on the chairs to make them look like leopards, a thing to look like a polka-dotted giraffe, a zebra, and he's painting the jungle with a little George.
And then the room has a collection of Curious George books, a lunchbox, a bank, some Curious George toys from McDonald's, a little magic cloth doll collection, you know, the little monkey that you put the different clothes on, some wooden toys, George and a wooden train, and there's a wooden puzzle.
George memorabilia.
George memorabilia. And with that, the interview concluded, which is why we call it the George Room.
Pictures of George on the wall.
Now, who's George, in case people don't know? Well, like they wouldn't know.
He's a monkey, and he's in books, and he has movies, and he's a monkey. There's pictures of George, and he's going to keep all the George stuff.
All the George stuff? It sounds like we've got quite a bit. What do we have in here? What's all the George stuff that you're talking about?
Toys and books and photos and lunchboxes and action figures.
Yeah. What's this picture over here?
It's a picture of the dude giving him a hat.
The dude giving him a hat?
I mean a bike.
A bike? And who's the dude?
The dude with the yellow hat.
The man with the yellow hat.
The dude with the yellow hat.
The dude with the yellow hat. Okay. And I recognize this picture over here. It's from the very first book. What's going on here?
He's putting on the yellow hat.
And why is the hat sitting there on the grass?
Because the guy took it off.
And so, we're going to try to explore some questions about monkeys. We'll be poking around at such thought-provoking questions as, how have monkeys influenced us? How are we similar? What have we learned from monkeys? How have we treated monkeys? And why do we like monkeys? Please join us for Of Bananas, Coconuts, and Organ Grinders, The Influence of Monkeys on Human Civilization, presented by the Monkey House on DS 106 Radio. Radio for Life. Welcome back. You're listening to DS106 Radio. Bananas, coconuts, and organ grinders. The influence of monkeys on human civilization. So we've got a number of pieces that we're going to be enjoying this evening. And we had a great list of different things. We had a couple members of our group who had other commitments this week. And so we don't have all of the things that we originally had on the list covered, but we've done our best to try and do so, because there's really so much that we could do with monkeys. We just didn't know where to stop. So we're going to start off with a little sound experience, and then we're going to go to Mohammed, who is going to be posing a very interesting question. In a small temple at the Galta Hill of Jaipur, India, a group of priests are chanting and playing. The temple, known as the Monkey Temple, is a pilgrim site, nicknamed the Jewel of Jaipur. The temple is perched between the cliff faces of a rocky valley and the many pavilions, holy bathing pools, and shrines. The temple houses sacred tanks whose water is claimed to be 7 elephants deep. At sunset, hundreds of monkeys converge on the temple. There are monkeys all around. People bring loaves of bread or peanuts to feed them. As you enter the temple, you see pools of water with monkeys bathing. People are worshipping, and the structure is magnificent.
For good or for evil. While some animals tend to have, you know, just one symbol or one, at least, you know, good or evil, such as like a lion, for example, across most cultures, a lion usually symbolizes something positive. Monkeys, depending on which species and depending on the culture and the context of it, can symbolize a lot of different things. For one, it's a Chinese zodiac, and it can symbolize, and it's associated with being an inventor, intelligent, a motivator, quick-witted, loyal, polite, dignified, but there's also a negative side to it. That zodiac sign has the potential to be egotistical, arrogant, selfish, stubborn, cunning, manipulative, and so it seems to cover both sides of the spectrum. In Hinduism, there's a prominent divine entity called Hanuman, and it's a monkey-like human that is associated with longevity and bestowing longevity to people, which is something extremely positive. But in a very neighboring religion, it's seen in Buddhism, a monkey is associated with the early incarnation of Buddha, but it also represents trickery and ugliness. And there's a Chinese Buddhist metaphor that's called mind monkey, which is that restless state of a human mind, and that's what it's in reference to. And it's considered one of the three senseless creatures, and the symbol that it represents is greed. So very, very, very negative. Also, if we look at, you know, our own society, the first thing that came to mind was the winged monkeys of, you know, of Oz, and they were used, you know, for doing the witch's evil doing. We look at, for example, you know, King Kong, he wasn't exactly a nice guy. He's a misunderstood, but yet again in the movie, you know, he inflicts a lot of damage and stuff. So it's an odd creature. I think it's very different from other animals that are seen in society, where it can take both good and bad characteristics, depending on, I guess, the context. Another thing that I found very interesting, we have this common phrase, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. Well, its roots come from the Japanese three wise monkeys, or mystical apes. And these three apes, they embody this proverb. And in their three names are Mizaru, Kikazaru, and Iwozaru. And they're usually in the form of sculptures. And when you see them, one monkey is covering their eyes, the other is covering their ears, and the other one's covering their mouth to symbolize, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, and speak no evil. Looking more into other cultures, the Mayans and the Aztecs viewed the monkeys as something very positive. They were associated with a lot of gods. They were patrons of the art and symbols of knowledge and prophecy in the Mayan culture. And the monkey was associated with the sun in the Aztec culture. But if you look at, like in Togo, monkeys were associated with witchcraft. In Egypt, they were associated. Some monkeys were deemed demonic, as well as Ethiopia. But at the same time, in the same instance, some monkeys were considered holy to Egyptians. Were kept as pets. Some were associated as protectors and symbols of certain gods, and they were kept in temples. They lived amongst. I mean, it's just like, I guess, like having a dog right now. So it was just very interesting looking at how, you know, across the board and across the spectrum they were considered. So a force for good or evil, I guess, is a very subjective question. Depends where you are in the time period and what kind of monkey you have, I guess. So, yep, that's it.
Now we're in China. This is a traditional Chinese ritual that is being performed in the open area of a housing estate. You can hear Chinese musical instruments and voices. What they're doing is praying to a monkey god to keep them safe. Welcome back. You're listening to a Monkey House production on DS106 Radio, Radio for Life. Okay, we're now going to have a little audience participatory segment to the show. We had all kinds of things about famous monkeys and, you know, what are the famous monkeys we know of? What are the famous monkeys in literature, famous monkeys in movies, and so on. And so what we've put together is a little monkey movie mashup. There are clips from 8 movies that feature monkeys. And your task, should you choose to tweet it, is to identify first the movie, and second, the monkey that is featured in that particular film. I believe, with one exception, they're all feature films. One of them might come from a different context. You'll probably figure it out. So this is the first playing of our monkey movie mashup. 8 monkeys.
It's a monkey!
Right turn!
I'm tired of walking around.
You maniacs!
Okay, now I just listened to that kind of live now, and I was going to play it again later in the show, and I will, but I think I'll play it again now once more, just to give you a little bit more of an opportunity. So here it is a second time.
It's a monkey!
Right turn!
I'm tired, I'm walking around.
You maniacs!
Okay, and that might be a little bit too much information for a tweet. So how about if you want to use email as an alternative, we're all friends here. You can email me at a4grave@gmail.com, and we will accept entries until 10 minutes after 10. And any winners or leaders of the competition will be shared via Twitter afterwards. Okay, so the Monkey Movie Mashup. Now let's move on to Jasmine. Jasmine Anderson has investigated the very interesting question of monkeys and motherhood. But before that, she's got a little musical selection as an introduction.
Welcome back. Speaking of bananas, let's keep the topic of monkeys rolling. I'd like to start talking about mother monkeys and the similarities they have with human mothers. Because there are so many, monkeys have oftentimes been used in experiments to gain insight into human emotional development. And one of the most famous of those are the monkey love experiments that were conducted by the psychologist Harry Harlow in the 1950s on maternal deprivation. These experiments, although I wouldn't get into way too much detail about them, I can give you an abbreviated version. Long story short, the baby monkeys, when given a choice between a terry cloth mother and a barbed wire mesh mother, they oftentimes went for the terry cloth mother, although both were capable of nursing. And the babies that were with the terry cloth mother seemed to develop a little bit more closely, well, in a sense, a lot more closely to how they would have developed if they were, in fact, raised by a monkey than to the ones that were raised, in a sense, by the barbed wire mesh monkeys, which provided a great deal of insight into the baby-mother relationship and how the attachment between a mother and a baby is not solely centered around nursing, but around the comfort and nurturing that is also provided through mother greatly on the rest of the individual's life. And this experiment also played a huge role in adoption and the procedures involved with it.
Well, I don't care what the whole world thinks.
She loves the monkey uncle.
Call us a couple of missing links.
She loves the monkey.
With that being said, research that has been done on monkeys, on a monkey's first moments of life, are very similar to that of a human's and their offspring. As far as humans are concerned, after a baby is born, the parents, more specifically the mother, spends time gazing to the baby's eyes and humming to the baby with secret hopes that the baby knows exactly who its mother is and can recognize her voice at a drop of a dime, which science has proven is in fact true. The mother also does other things such as kissing the baby, rubbing the baby, and oftentimes after birth, the doctor will suggest baby to bare chest, which is, stripping the baby down to its diaper and opening, your robe and placing the baby on your chest, because the warmth of the mother's body and heartbeat is soothing to the infant. That technique is also used with babies that are ill, as well as premature babies, to help them heal and help with their development. which is very similar to the interaction that takes place with mother monkeys and their infants. After baby monkeys are born, the mother and the infant spend a lot of time gazing into each other's eyes. A lot more time than they spend staring into any other monkey's eyes. Another thing that researchers noticed was that the mother monkey smacked their lips at their infant, and the babies generally did it back. And if they couldn't, they spent a lot of time trying to. Also, it was noticed that the mother monkey was often looking for its child's gaze. It would constantly stare at the child in hopes that the child would stare back. And eventually, after a while, if the mother and the baby eyes weren't meeting, the mother would often reposition the baby's head to so the baby that would look at him. These similarities to me make me wonder about movies such as Mighty Joe Young and Tarzan and things like that, because there are, in fact, so many similarities. And to me, it just makes those kind of movies seem more, you know, likely to happen, you know?
You're listening to Of Bananas, Coconuts, and Organ Grinders, The Impact of Monkeys on Human Civilization on DS-106. Thank you, Jasmine. Jasmine talking about monkeys and motherhood. And certainly some similarities there, no doubt about it. I think in preparing for this, I saw a figure of 98%, something like that, in terms of similarities or identicality of DNA between us and our close companions in the animal kingdom. And so understanding this a little bit is something that Shannon has spent some time on, trying to understand. We heard Jasmine refer to the missing link there, and Shannon's monkey name in the monkey house is Lucy. And so she's going to tell us a little bit about Lynx and Lucy, monkeys and science. Here is Shannon Hauser.
Hey there, you DS-106 radio nuts. You are listening to Of Bananas, Coconuts, and Organ Grinders, The Influence of Monkey on Human Civilization. This is Shannon, a.k.a. Shauser. This segment of our show takes a brief look back at one point in our ancient past. So take a seat on your vestigial tail and use that opposable thumb to turn up the volume.
Why has no one found the missing link between modern humans and ancient apes?
We did find it. It's called Homo erectus.
Then you have proven my case, sir. For no one has found the link between apes and this Homo erectus.
The human search for common ancestry, connection, understanding where we came from began to build up in the 20th century and has grown exponentially ever since. There are so many fossils in the evolutionary tale, and there's still so much we don't know about our origins. Where would one begin? For this segment, I'll be looking briefly at Australopithecus afarensis, more specifically the most famous fossil specimen from the species, Lucy. So why Lucy in the long line of fossils that we have accumulated over the last couple of decades? Well, I think more than any other fossil, Lucy has taken a place in popular culture. I mean, she is named after the famous Beatles song, Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds. People may not always know the specifics, but when people hear Lucy, they think missing link. And while the whole idea of a missing link is a bit of a misnomer, it nonetheless places Lucy as an understandable node between us and a distant past. So, what is up with Lucy? Well, briefly put, Lucy was, at the time, in the 1970s when she was discovered, the earliest fossil we had at about 3.2 million years old, that seemed to be human-like. And what made her so human-like? Well, she was the earliest fossil that exhibited the move towards bipedalism, so walking upright on two legs. If you look at Lucy's foot, she exhibits a great degree of similarity to our foot. If you look at her toe, unlike a lot of other monkeys, has lost the ability to be opposable and it's moved in line with the rest of our toes, like our feet. This is a foot that is meant to walk upright and handle the weight of a foot moving forward and carrying the weight. These changes led to all sorts of changes in our bodies. Our pelvises shifted, our legs got longer, our spine is a more erect position. It is a revolutionary part in our evolutionary history. As humans, we tend to anthropomorphize everything. We look for ways to connect to things that are non-human or sort of human. We want to see ourselves in things. The discovery of Lucy, who is related to us, and her bipedalism connected us way back into the past, millions of years, to when we first began, of how standing upright freed us to use our hands to create tools to tinker with our environment, to create a world to our liking, for better or for worse. Lucy is a small example of how we can see the story of our human ancestry, and we can begin to understand the long journey it's been to get us here to modern humans. Just a brief segment of our ancient monkey past.
Welcome back. You're listening to DS106 Radio. Bananas, coconuts, and organ grinders. The influence of monkeys on human civilization. So, at this point, there are three people, each who have identified one movie from the monkey movie mashup. So I think either people aren't interested, or they need to hear it again. So here's the monkey movie mashup again.
It's a monkey!
Right turn!
I'm tired, I'm walking around.
You maniacs!
So, we're looking for the movie title, as well as the name of the monkey associated with the movie. Good luck.
Welcome back. You're listening to DS106 Radio. Bananas, coconuts, and organ grinders. The influence of monkeys on human civilization.
Child, our child, and we have responsibilities to him now. Richard, we do. We can't just abandon him to the Thurston Foundation. The voice was hoarse. It is wrong.
We've just been listening in on the classroom of Heather Dernan, colleague and friend, and fellow DS106 radio listener and participant. Earlier this year, Heather shared a book with her students entitled Half Brother, by a Canadian author named Kenneth Opel. The book is, based, on an experiment that was conducted beginning in the 70s on a monkey with a monkey entitled Nim. In fact, Nim Chimpsky was the full name of the monkey, a play on Noam Chomsky, who was debating the issue of language being inherent to humans. And so in this experiment, they were attempting to teach sign language to the monkey. When I found we were going to be doing a monkey theme for our radio show, I thought it would be nice for us to Skype with Heather and have her tell us a little bit more about the book, why she selected it, and how her students reacted to it. Here's Heather.
half-brother, as you said, is by a Canadian author, which is one of the reasons why we chose it. Last year, the Idea Hive read The Book Thief, which is by an Australian author. So this time we wanted to do something a little different. It was on the Red Maple reading list, which was is usually put out each year and is some of the top books for middle school students. And so with it being on there, we had the blessing of many other people that it was going to be relevant and appropriate for our students. So we jumped in and started reading the book through the Idea Hive via Skype and then also using our 105 The Hive radio station.
105 The Hive, radio for learning.
105 The Hive is alive.
We could talk more about that another time.
That's right.
So, tell us a little bit about the book, because it does have to do with monkeys, which is our theme that we're exploring today.
Right. So, Half-Brother is the story about a married couple, two scientists, and their son, Ben. And the story really centers around their 13-year-old son, Ben. And
I thought, wouldn't it be exciting to communicate with a chimp and find out what it was thinking? So why not teach him sign language? And that's essentially why I started Project NIM.
I know nothing about chimpanzees. Herb wanted me to take NIM into my home as if he were a child. The fact that we could share language with an animal seemed very radical at that time.
There was no family discussion. It was just, oh, we're having a chimp. We're going to teach a sign language. Nobody in the house really was fluent in sign language.
You know, a couple weeks, Ben, the 13-year-old boy, was really ticked off at his parents for bringing this, you know, animal into their life. And he's mad that he's had to move to the other side of Canada, to the university that his parents are working at. But then as the story moves along, we see the relationship develop between Zan, the baby chimp as he's growing up, and Ben, the 13-year-old boy, as the chimp does learn some sign language and they learn how to communicate with each other. And it also, another part of the story centers around Ben and his relationship with girls and all of the awkward moments that that entails with a 13-year-old. So to read that aloud to our students was really fun.
So, and your students are this age, right? They're 13,
yeah.
14.
So, yeah.
So how did they respond to the book?
They loved it. They loved it for many different reasons. There was a lot of humor in it, particularly when, you know, Ben was discovering how to get a girlfriend. But then when it came to the part about the chimp, it was really emotionally appealing to them because, you know, here's this cute little chimp and wouldn't that be great to have a pet like that in your house and all the funny things that this little chimp did. But of course, as the chimp got older and bigger, he became much more aggressive and violent. And I don't really want to tell how the story ends, but basically the research project had to be shut down. And the baby chimp, which is now a couple years old, had to leave their home. And this chimp had become his brother. So it became very, very disturbing and sad in many cases as it moved through the story.
Nim gone from being this meek little huggable toy to a robust young chimpanzee.
He's going to be big, 5 to 6 times the strength of men.
He's got fangs.
This is 37 stitches.
In that sense, he was becoming more chimp-like. It didn't seem to be a cause for alarm. I had never regarded him as a child. I regarded him as a scientific project. Nobody keeps a chimp for more than 5 years.
I had the best time of my life. I've never had such a good time, except maybe at a Grateful Dead show.
The reality of it is it's not a doll, it's not a toy, it's not a human, it's a chimp.
We had Dr. Suzanne Baird come into our classroom, and she spoke on 105 The Hive to the classes in both Manitoba and Ontario, answering their questions. The students wanted to know about what laws or what protections were in place for animals that were being tested on in a research capacity. And she made it very clear in her explanation that there's been a lot of safeguards put in place over the last 20 years or so that makes animal testing a little more safer for the animals. And she also very clearly talked about the benefits to human health that have come out because of animal testing. And that was really enlightening for the students.
The reality of it is it's not a doll, it's not a toy, it's not a human, it's a chimp.
Important point to make is that at the very end of this project, where when we had finished reading Half Brother, we had finished watching Project Nim, and I asked the students, you know, at the end of it, what did you think about animal testing? What did you think about the way that Nim, which was the chimp in the documentary, and Zan were treated? And they were really angry. They said, you know, it's clear that these animals were brought into a home and treated like humans. And then when the researchers decided that the research wasn't going to end up the way they wanted, they basically tossed them back out and expected them to become chimps again. And so while the researchers had initially made a huge commitment to these chimps, they left and they felt they did a huge disservice to their souls. And that was a really compelling thing to hear, you know, kids that are 12 and 13-year-old kids think.
You are listening to Of Bananas, Coconuts, and Organ Grinders, The Impact of Monkeys on Human Civilization on DS-106.
What can you tell me about monkeys?
Monkeys have tails, and they're almost like humans, and they have hands for feet.
They have hands for feet? So what does that let them do?
It lets them hang upside down and stuff.
Cool. Would you like to be able to do that?
I wish I was a monkey.
If you wish you were a monkey sometimes? Yeah. What's the most famous monkey that you know of?
Chimp Chimp. From Speed Racer.
From Speed Racer. And so who's the main character in Speed Racer?
Speed Racer.
Speed Racer. But who's the one who actually has Chimp Chimp?
His little brother,
Spritel. Spritel. And he's kind of funny, isn't he?
Yeah, he's always going out to get food and candy.
So why do you think they put a monkey in Speed Racer?
To make it interesting.
I think that people like monkeys because they are so similar to humans. They definitely can do some sort or some way, shape, or form of communicating with humans using sign language, and that came out loud and clear in the book Half Brother, and most importantly came out loud and clear in the documentary Project Nim. So while the underlying question is, can chimps be taught to communicate, and the researchers decided no, they can't, because they can't create grammatical sentences, well, that may be true, but on the other hand, they certainly can indicate to humans what they like, what they don't like. They like to have fun, very hedonistic. And so the kids definitely could see that these chimps were a really fun animal to hang out with.
Fun animals, wonderful. Madeline L'Engle, famous author, writes an introduction to the 1994 hardcover re-release of the original Curious George books. In it, she interviews some kids, and she says, "What did you like the most about George? He was such a funny little monkey. I liked the pictures. I liked the way the pictures told all kinds of things, so they didn't need to be put down in words." But the most satisfactory answer came from a young man who said, "George did all the things we didn't dare do, so we could do them in our imaginations and not be scared." monkey dreams. Every little monkey has his dreams, beginner's eyes and wonders to be seen. Curiosity and play make up his world of childhood and of magic yet untold. With newness and with questions, find your way. Those stumbles and some boo-boos will ensue. Be sure to smile and sing and laugh and play to counter against the hazards of the day. Keep yet a little monkey in your soul to rest against the troubles and the toll. Whilst days become more complex and confused, recall a while that little monkey smile. Hey, I can hear my little monkeys in the other room. So we're coming to the end of Bananas, Coconuts, and Organ Grinders, the impact of monkeys on human civilization. We're up to 4 at my last viewing in the Twitter stream. 4 different people now, I think, who have each identified 1 monkey movie. I'll say monkey movie. I'm going to give one of them away in a minute. And it's the one that's not a movie. However, let's play them one more time so that you have another opportunity if you're still trying to get that last 7 of them. That's a tough one.
It's a monkey!
Think right presidents. Turn. Presidents.
I'm tired of walking around.
You maniacs!
Yeah, that last one could be a lot longer. It's a good 15 seconds, and it would be a dead giveaway. We have almost come to the end of our time. These are the closing credits. You can imagine them scrolling up the screen if we were in video world, but we're not. We're in the radio world. You've been listening to Of Bananas, Coconuts, and Organ Grinders, the impact of monkeys on human civilization. This show, part of the DS-106 Camp Magic MacGuffin project, has been created and produced by Jasmine Anderson from the University of Mary Washington, Mohammed Moaz from the University of Mary Washington, Shannon Hauser, aka NeoRev, formerly of the University of Mary Washington, and me, Andy Forgrave, an open online participant, like Shannon is now. I would like to thank Martha Burtis and Alan Levine, our co-camp directors, Jim Groom for all the stuff that he does, Timmy Boy, Dr. Garcia, I could go on and on and on with all the different people who contribute to DS-106 and DS-106 Radio, and the listeners who are out there now, other members of the Monkey House, other members of Camp Magic MacGuffin. Did that song answer one of your questions and give away one of the monkey movies? We're going to close out the formal part of the show with a song, and then Martha and I will be back on the Skype for some closing comments. So we're going to introduce a little bit more of Canadian content. This is, we're really proud of them, one day after Canada Day, but this is Rush with a song they have entitled The Main Monkey Business. May life bring you an abundance of bananas. That was Shannon's. Bananas are a metaphor for creativity.